Welcome to Scouting Post Podcast, The Three Amigos LTD. That's Ludicky Tiano Duffy Podcast, our second episode. Those of you who joined us back before the draft, you were treated to almost 2 hours. Actually, it wasn't almost. It was 2 hours of hockey talk focused on the Ontario Hockey League for the draft. Interestingly enough, the Boston Bruins didn't take a single player from the Ontario League, unfortunately. But hey, that doesn't mean we don't have things to talk about. This podcast is coming to you by request. We got a lot of things we're going to break down. We're going to talk about recent trades that have shaken the league to its foundations. We're going to talk about moves in Boston that maybe are setting up for what we all look forward to every July, which is the free agency period. And, of course, we will recap the Boston Bruins NHL draft for 2016 in Buffalo. Yours truly was there, and we have a lot of insights on the six players who are now members of the Boston Bruins organization. So without any further ado, I want to introduce my compatriots, Reed Duffy and Dom Tiano. How are you guys doing today?
Just wonderful.
Perfect today, Kurt. Thank you, and yourself.
Oh, man, I couldn't ask for a better situation, a better set of friends. We are the three amigos. So let's get right to it. I'm going to roll with Reed right off the bat. The expected, awaited, and I think well-received announcement today from the Boston Bruins, making it official, Torrey Krug, 4-year extension, back with the Boston Bruins and an opportunity to work his way, establish himself as the top three defenseman we know he is. He's not a specialist. And at an annual contract value of $5.25 million for the next 4 years, he's basically, he goes to unrestricted free agency at age 29 in the year 2020. Reed, break it down. What does this deal mean for the Bruins today?
Well, I think it definitely solidifies the fact that this team is going towards more speed, more tempo, and with Krug, you get a lot of skills to go along with that. He set his career high in points last year with 44 and 81 games. Of course, as a lot of people have said, the goals were down to 4%, or to 4 goals, but he shot at a ridiculously low percentage throughout the season, as we would later find out that was due to an injury as well. So I don't think we even got a full look at what Torrey Krug can be despite the career high in points. He has proven, as you said, Kirk, that he is more than just a specialist. He's a guy that is just a bulldog mentality kind of player. He will play in the corners. He will use what size he has. But the skill level on Torrey Krug is what gets him this contract. I have absolutely no issues with it because I think, did they overpay him maybe a little bit in the immediate? But as he continues to grow, that this contract is going to look just fine. I think you're looking at a kid who's developing his way into a Brian Rafalski-esque type of defenseman, undersized. But eventually you'll just forget about the size because of the way he plays the game. I couldn't be a bigger fan of Torrey Krug personally, so I'm very excited to see this. And I really like where this sets us up to go. Keeping Krug really, I believe, sets us along the path of up-tempo and skill.
Yeah, I think that's a great read, and I think you're right on the mark. Dom, what are your thoughts on Krug, what he brings to the team, and the announcement today? What does it mean for the Bruins going forward?
I think, just to add to what Reed said, I think the most underrated thing about Torrey Krug is his leadership. I think we all know Patrice Bergeron is the de facto captain of the Boston Bruins once Zdeno Chara retires. And I fully expect that Torrey Krug will have an A on his jersey in not the too distant future. And this guy seriously has some captain potential in him. And it wouldn't surprise me that after Bergeron is gone, that Torrey Krug would wear the C for the Bruins.
Well, that's high praise indeed. But yeah, you know, you're talking about we talk about Krug, you go back, you talk about the captaincy. What some people forget is he was named captain of the Michigan State Spartans as a sophomore. Had a strong freshman year, but it's so remarkable and rare for players to be team captains as really an underclassman. I mean, your first 2 years of a four-year school, you're considered an underclassman. So Krug only played 3 years at Michigan State before turning pro, but he was captain as a sophomore and a junior. So, you know, it's really a testament, I think, to his character. I've always felt like he has a heart of a lion. Liked him a lot when he was in college. Didn't really think the Bruins were going to have a shot at him, but I also did not realize that he was someone that they were in on as a potential draft selection in 2011, and that they, you know, reportedly were trying to get an extra seventh to invest it in him. And in hindsight, they certainly wish they had. It would have certainly cost them less to get him as a free agent. But I don't see the criticism of this deal. I know it's out there. Ideally, you would have loved to have gotten him under $5 million. But when you look at what other similar players, you look at a Jared Spurgeon, for example, he's the obvious comparable. Even Sami Vatanen, who got a pretty nice cap-friendly deal at $4.75 million. I mean, Krug's in the ballpark. And I challenge people who have a major issue with this deal to, A, tell us what Krug would have gotten, and if they're coming in with numbers of 3.5 to 4 million, I think they're in la-la land. And then B, definitively argue that he isn't a key member of this Boston Bruins defense.
Totally agree, Kirk, and I have no issue with the term or the money handed to him. And people have to remember, Torrey Krug gave the Boston Bruins a very cap-friendly contract, a deal on his last contract. So are they paying a little bit more now? I don't think they are. Maybe, you know, but what's a couple of $100,000? And, you know, he did them that favor in return when the Bruins were in a serious cap crunch. So, you know, it washes out in the end. I have no problem with the crew signing. Honestly, I wish it was for longer because that's how much I feel he's important to the team. But it is what it is. You know, people that want to complain about it, if it's not the Torrey Krug contract, it'll be something else that they complain about. But the guy is definitely a top four on this team. He's paid like that. To me, to a very... very good deal for both sides. I don't think the Bruins overpaid. I don't think Torrey Krug was underpaid. So I'm happy with it.
Yeah, I'm really happy with it as well, like I said. And, John, you hit the nail on the head. I wish it had been a little bit longer, too. I'd love to see Krug be a Bruin through his entire career. I cannot express how much I enjoy watching him play the game. And I saw some of the criticism about his defensive game. I think anybody who is still really harping on that has an agenda. Either they don't like Torrey Krug because he's an undersized defenseman, or they're just so far against this front office that they're going to criticize absolutely anything they do. Because what I see in Krug in his own zone, I don't think there's an issue with Krug in his own zone. I think at times you may have had an issue with him having to do a little bit too much to overcompensate for partners that could have been playing with an injury, or well, especially playing with an injury when you look at some of the times McQuaid and Miller have been with him. And he's had to shepherd pairs at times. Seidenberg, when he was paired with Krug, as we'll get to, he's not the player he once was. I think if you get a really nice right-handed compliment to Torrey Krug, you're going to see him go to a completely different level.
Couldn't agree more.
Precisely it, Reed. It's the partner that he had to play with, and Krug had to do too much compensating when it came to taking care of his back end. And he did a really good job of it. People don't realize 5-on-5, goals for and goals against, Torrey Krug was, I believe, top three among defensemen in the NHL. They were under two goals against 5-on-5 with with Torrey Krug on the ice. And to me, that's not a bad defensive player.
Yeah. No, I totally agree. It's funny. I had someone got on my Twitter today. He's a gentleman in Boston, part of the 98.5 team, and he said Krug was awful in his own end. I said, I leveled a challenge. I said, hey, next time in Boston, you and me are going to sit together watching a game, and I'm going to show you how wrong you are. That ought to be fun. He took me up on the challenge, to his credit. But that's going to be enjoyable because I love nothing better than to watch games and point out, the subtleties and the nuances out there. And maybe people, again, you can't do that for everyone, but just to have the chance to say, hey, did you see that? Did you watch the position? Did you watch the stick position? Did you see what that subtle move there? Because I think you're 100% right. I think it is an agenda. There are just some people who are preternaturally disposed to judging players who don't have this ideal size, and they just don't think that smaller defensemen have a place and can be anything more than specialists. And again, I'm not trying to bang on people. Look, everyone's entitled to their opinion, but what they aren't entitled to is their own set of facts. They're not allowed to just declare that hey, this is the case, and then not be challenged. Just like I want to be challenged too. But again, when someone says he's just a specialist, I'll bring out that statistic that said he was top three in the NHL at even strength for goals for, goals against. I'll bring up his time on ice, which rose exponentially, and he was not sheltered, because that was the argument against him last year. Remember, guys? Oh, he's sheltered, this, that, and the other thing.
Yeah.
So,
not only that defensively, Kurt, he can be on the ice and not touch the puck and still be strong defensively just by simply the way he directs traffic. He sees things coming towards him. He processes it quickly and intelligently, and he can direct traffic. So he'll send his winger over or direct his winger over here or his D partner over here, and they make the play because he sees something else coming towards him and is able to take that play away. So it's not always about the puck itself. Just the directing traffic alone is another key component of being strong defensively that Krug possesses that people don't really see.
All right, good, good. All right, let's we mentioned it earlier. Another bit of Bruins news today. Bittersweet. I think I've seen that described on Twitter. I think it's absolutely the right word. Dennis Seidenberg, six full seasons, parts of a seventh, because he was acquired at the 2010 trade deadline and one of Peter Chiarelli's really unheralded deals, just in terms of what he was able to spin out of a couple of assets that never really turned into NHL players in Matt Lashoff and Martin Karsooms, to get Seidenberg, to get Matt Barkowski. And Dennis Seidenberg announced today that he's been placed on unconditional waivers for the purpose of a buyout. Dom, I want you to lead this. Talk a little bit about what Seidenberg brought to the team, and then if you would, kind of educate the listeners on what this means. What does the buyout mean? How do the numbers break down for the Bruins? And maybe try to explain why they did it now versus conventional thought that said they should have at least waited a year and only bought out the last of a four-year contract.
Well, first of all, I'd like to thank him on behalf of all Bruins fans for what he brought to the team. Especially during that cup run, and through to a second final against Chicago. He was really a warrior. He led the Bruins in ice time during the cup run. It was just him and Zdeno Chara together were like trying to go through a brick wall. It's just unbelievable what this guy meant to the team. And nobody really expected that type of player from Dennis Seidenberg when Chiarelli first acquired him. It's sad for me because I was always a fan of him. And towards the end of last season, I started to see some improvement in him, but he's had a couple of devastating injuries, and where the Bruins are now, they had to almost be assured that he was going to rebound, and nobody could reassure to the Bruins that Dennis Seidenberg was going to be 100% again. So you know, I'm sad to see him bought out, but I don't think that the Bruins had much of a choice. And here's the thing. I already put it out there a couple of days ago that I talked to a player agent. I don't want to get into names here because then it'll lead to more speculating and everything. But
yeah, don't burn your source, man. Don't burn your source. That's cool.
Yeah,
we're all good with that.
Yeah. You know, he basically told me straight out, and he was very definitive and really emphasized. And basically what he said to me is the Bruins are, with emphasis on the word are, preparing an offer sheet and are preparing to do the buyout. Now, this was a couple of days ago, you know, so I knew the writing was on the wall, and I kind of put two together and figured it was going to be Dennis Seidenberg. Now, what it means for the Bruins is I don't have the exact numbers in front of me, but his cap hit is now going to be over 4 years as opposed to the remaining 2 years he had on his contract. Now, there's always the possibility that somebody's going to grab him off of waivers and they'll be stuck with nothing, but the chances of that are pretty slim and none of that happening. So they're going to be stuck with a cap hit of, I think it was $1.8 million for this upcoming season, then $2.1 million, then it drops down again for the final two. I believe those are the numbers off the top of my head. What it does for the Bruins, and, you know, Aaron Ward tweeted it out earlier today, was that the Dennis Seidenberg buyout now means that the Bruins can sign Torey Krug, and that news could come today or tomorrow, and obviously it came down today. But he couldn't be more totally wrong. I mean, the Bruins came into the day with almost $21 million in cap space. They did not have to buy out Torey Krug today, to buy out Dennis Seidenberg today to sign Torey Krug today. Totally untrue. So what does it mean? I mean, if I go back to my conversation with the player agent that I had, are they preparing for an offer sheet, and are they preparing to sign somebody else as an unrestricted free agent? And to me, that's what this bio means. It's for something other than Torey Krug, because they didn't have to do it for Torey Krug. You know, there are names out there, you know, our friend Joe Haggerty and Jimmy Murphy were saying that that Trouba may be the guy they're putting the offer sheet together for. I mean, Elliot Friedman jumped on that in his 30 thoughts last night and actually gave a couple of scenarios that would put Winnipeg in a really, really hard position. And you know, I think this is what we're looking at with the Seidenberg. I don't want to get too much into the offer sheet because I know we'll talk about that later, but it had nothing to do with Torey Krug. It's about saving money for this year. And it's not even so much the roster spot, because they've got a lot of wiggle room under the 50 contract limit. So it's not even about creating a roster spot, per se, when it comes to the contract limit, because they have lots of space there. Yeah. It's about the dollars.
Yeah, hey, Dom, I don't think it's about the roster spot on the 50 limit. I think it's about the, you know, a veteran not blocking a new player to come in, whether you're talking a younger guy or a new addition. That's the issue. I mean, Seidenberg is pretty firmly established, so unless they moved him out, like, he's preventing someone from grabbing a spot. So I think that's more what it's about when you talk roster spot.
I guess that's what they're talking about. But you know what? If a younger player comes in and pushes him, that pushes Seidenberg upstairs. It's not I don't think it's the money. The money issue is because they have something else planned, and that they need every dollar available to them to be able to at least try and do what they're accomplished. I mean, I've heard that, you know, they've tried to trade Seidenberg. They've tried to trade him with salary retained or just no takers. And I mean, they had till 5:30 today to do it. And as difficult as it probably was for Donnie Sweeney, I think he made the right choice. You know, could they have waited? Yeah, because there is a second buyout window, but it involves two players going to salary arbitration, and with Krug signing, that only leaves Ferland and Castro as arbitration eligible on the team. Now, do you want to take Castro to arbitration and have him stuck in Providence on a one-way contract? Yeah. No, so it had to be done today, and I think management has a plan, and they considered all the options, and the buyout had to do more with dollars than it had to do about a roster spot for somebody else.
Okay, good. Reed, yeah, let's let you weigh in on Dennis Seidenberg, and then let's move on. I mean, again, he was a heck of a key cog in that defensive machine that got it done. So I want to pay tribute, but man, we're probably getting bogged down, and I know people want us to move on to some other topics. So go ahead and summarize your thoughts on Seidenberg, if you would, Reed.
Yeah, I'll keep is actually my favorite Boston Bruin of the number of years. I wanted the Bruin when I saw him in Philadelphia, when I saw him in Carolina, and when I saw him in Florida. I've always been a fan of Dennis Seidenberg. I appreciate everything he did for this team, and his number 44 will hang in my house with a Stanley Cup patch on it for years and years to come. I got that jersey right after we won the Stanley Cup, and I will always hold on to that one. It is my grand Bruins fan. Getting to watch that with my dad, and it's somewhat emotional seeing him go. I understand we had to do it, and I just wish Seidenberg all the very best. We will miss the prime years of Dennis Seidenberg in Boston.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, I was a doubter when he was first traded. You may recall that. He was impending unrestricted free agent, and I thought he was just a rental piece. And so I was a little perplexed that they would give up that second round pick in 2010, which ended up being Alex Petrovic, who's, you know, hey, let's face it, he's an NHL defenseman. He's a solid, serviceable guy. But to give up, you know, to essentially have gotten Seidenberg and Mark Recchi and Barkowski for Matt Lashoff and Martin Skarsooms and Byron Bitts is just a remarkable bit of GMing by Chiarelli. Seidenberg, you know, he missed the playoffs that year due to tendon damage on a skate, an errant skate, and he came back strong. He signed an extension and you know, became a real rock in Boston, and I'll never forget that. And it just goes to show you, don't judge trades on the day they're made. You know, there's always a chance to evaluate and see where it leads, and that's an obvious segue to the next topic, because yesterday we had several trades, and as you guys no doubt know, a lot of those the books were being closed on those trades moments after they were made, and that may or may not be warranted. So let's take a look. Where do we want to start? I guess what we can do before we get too far down into it. And get to the draft, I guess we'll start with our old friend Peter Chiarelli, since we were talking about his Seidenberg move, that effective move to bring Seidenberg to Boston. Yesterday, he traded the first overall pick in 2010, Taylor Hall, a player who the Bruins just as easily could have ended up with had the Oilers opted for Tyler Seguin. Instead, Chiarelli trades Hall to the New Jersey Devils for Adam Larson, who I think is an underrated defenseman and probably is... you know, getting the Trent Frederick treatment from Oilers fans in terms of them being disappointed and taking out their angst on the player. But ultimately, I think he's pretty solid. He's going to help that Oilers D. But I think it comes back to the return. There was just an expectation that if you're going to trade Hall, you should get more for him. That's kind of echoes of the Tyler Seguin move. What say you guys? Let's start with Reed on this one.
Well, I agree with that entirely. I have been a fan. Kirk, you will know it well. We've talked about him before, I do believe. Adam Larsson, I'm a fan of his. I have been since I saw him play with the Swedish Juniors, and he played on a team with Victor Hedman. I have always enjoyed his game. He hasn't brought everything he could be to the National Hockey League just yet, but he's still growing. He's still a young player. It's totally on the return. Taylor Hall is a tremendous hockey player, caveat when he's healthy. A tremendous hockey player when he's healthy. But you should probably, at this point, have gotten more for him than Adam Larsson by himself. I think even if there had been a decent draft pick thrown in or a prospect thrown in, you wouldn't see the kind of angst from Oilers fans that you are right now. The problem for the Oilers has been for a long time, they did not draft really any defense. And now they've gone out and got a guy who instantly makes that team better. Jesse Puljujärvi could come right in and playing with Connor McDavid give you the same sort of thing, maybe not quite the same sort of thing, but pretty decent offense to replace what Taylor Hall was giving you. And now you've added that element that you didn't have on that back line. Larsson, Sakara, and Nurse looks a lot better than what they've had previously. So I don't think it's as horrible as people are making it out to be. I think there probably should have been a little more going from New Jersey, but I think once the game starts, Edmonton fans are going to wind up pretty happy.
Agree totally, and I still think that Larson's has a ways to go before he's the best that he's going to be. So, you know, like Reed said, they should have probably got something more. But what is it with that 2010 draft? What is it? The top six players selected in that draft have now been traded. And, you know, it just goes to show when all things are equal in the draft, you probably draft for need. And I think when it came to Taylor Hall and Tyler Seguin, to me, they were equal. And what difference would there be today if Edmonton had chosen Seguin number one and the Bruins ended up with Hall at number two? They'd both still be on their respective clubs. But, there was rumors about Taylor Hall two seasons ago about the Bruins being heavily interested in him. And while Shirelli was running the show, and rumors about Milan Lucic going the other way. Well, you know, Peter Chiarelli could end up with both of them in Edmonton as of, 9 a.m. tomorrow morning. So, as Reed said, when you add Puljujärvi into the mix, boy, I hate to break it down and look at it as a trade as Hall for Larsson and Puljujärvi, because that really blows it out of proportion. Something else should have gone the other way, whether it be a decent draft pick or not, like Reed said. They're totally in agreement with that.
Yeah. Well, you know, I tell you, though, if they go and they spend big money on Lucic, it just, I can't help but shake the feeling that Chiarelli, it's going to be deja vu all over again, where down the road, they're going to be robbing Peter to pay Paul, and they're going to be paying the Piper, because there's a guy named Connor McDavid that's going to be lining up for some serious coin. And at some point, you know, if you've got massive bucks invested in McDavid and Lucic and whoever else it's going to take to keep there, that's going to have an impact on the supporting cast.
Definitely. Yeah, definitely.
No doubt Lucic is you know, going to be a big name here. And if the Oilers get him, I just wonder what it's going to take to sign him and what that cost. What players down the road, younger upside players, is that going to cost the Edmonton Oilers, because they're just not going to have the capital to keep him in the fold? But I guess that's what GMs get paid to do, and we'll find out.
And it's not just McDavid. I mean, McDavid will be the top paid player in the league, no doubt in my mind. When it happens, I don't know. Does it happen after his entry-level contract? Possibly. But you've got to throw Puljujärvi in there, too. I mean, they've got him on the cheap for 3 years. I hear rumors of Lucic in Edmonton has done it, something like $6.5 million for 6 years. Like you said, that's a lot of dough, Kurt. You know,
You can't move that guy if he breaks down and is hurt. And everyone knows that there's a lot of tread on Lucic's tire. And, you know, I have nothing but respect for Milan Lucic. You talk about, you know, a guy who was nothing but great to me personally and was a terrific Bruin. But, you know, he's 28 and he's got a lot of tread on the tire. And, man, that's going to be another just, you know, it's going to look fine here in years one and two. But when you start getting to year three, he's up over 30 now. If that body starts to break down, we're looking at some potential problems here.
Totally agree. It's even if it's a front loaded contract, who's going to want to take on a $6 billion cap hit for a guy that's not going to bring anything to them? Yeah, that's gonna be tough for Shirelli to swallow that one, boy.
Of course, yeah. I would point out, you know, who would have thought that Columbus could have gotten out under Nathan Horton's contract, and they did. So I guess they'll always be, you know, when you look at, I guess the way GMs look at it is there are always going to be those teams that need to get to the floor that might be willing to take those contracts for cents on the dollar, even though it means they're not getting a productive player. So who knows? Right. But I, you know, again, it's tough to gamble and roll the dice on that strategy so far out. I mean, I just think Lucic.
I think there's a difference in taking on the contract of a Milan Lucic, where you actually have to pay dollars out, as opposed to, say, Pavel Datsyuk, where, yeah, you're taking on the cap hit, but it costs you absolutely zero in dollars. Yeah. You know, it's. I think there's a big difference in that. And I hope that Shirelli and company are smart enough that if they sign Lucic for that long and that kind of money, that they're smart enough to ensure that contract.
Well, I'm sure they will. I can't imagine they wouldn't, huh?
Well, I can't imagine they wouldn't, but, you know, I mean, even though he's on an entry-level contract, you're insuring Connor McDavid. You have to insure Nugent Hopkins because of the dollars he makes, the same with Jordan Eberle. I'm sure that they're going to want to insure Larson's contract. I mean, there's some big money there that they've got to insure, and you know, can they afford to do that too? I mean, it depends on what the team budget for things like that is as well, because that's going to cost a pretty penny.
And don't forget, at some point, they're going to have to pay up pretty good money to Leon Draisaitl too, if they keep him as well.
Yep, exactly. I forgot about Draisaitl. There's another one that, you know, he's going to be due to make some big money in the time that Lucic is going to be there, if the 6 years is in fact what he signs for.
They better hope Darnell Nurse doesn't take a big step forward this year too.
There's another one. Oh. You know?
Reed, take us into PK Subban now in the Music City and what happened there.
Wow. Well, as you guys know, being in Hamilton, we used to have the Montreal Canadiens Farm Club here, and the old Hamilton Bulldogs before they switched over to the OHL. And this city has a lot of Habs fans in it, and it felt like somebody just took the air right out of the town. PK Subban is a beloved figure amongst Montreal Canadiens fans, and every one of them that I talk to is just – it's almost to the point where they're not even mad. They're just in shock of what happened. They get a great player back in Shea Weber. There's no question about that. But in making this deal one for one, you've traded the years age 27 through 31 of PK Subban for 31 through 40 of Shea Weber. You know, you've essentially traded a PK Subban who hasn't really even come into his prime yet for Shea Weber, who will still be on the Canadiens' payroll when he's collecting from AARP.
Yeah.
This is a little awkward, I think, if you're Montreal, and it almost speaks to a slight, I guess I'll say desperation from Mark Bergevin that I didn't know he had to move PK Subban.
I mean, is it Zdeno Chara potentially redo when Weber gets to 37, 38, 39? I mean, you know, there's a lot of tread on that tire as well.
Yeah, there's a lot of minutes on that, man.
One thing you have to remember when it comes to Weber, though, is that if Shea Weber doesn't finish that contract, Montreal is not on the hook. Nashville is. I believe Shea Weber, once he hits 33, and I'm talking about cap recapture here, once he hits 33, Montreal is not responsible for one penny of cap recapture. It all falls back on Nashville. So let's say Shea Weber doesn't finish his last year, which will be 40 going on 41. Let's say he retires that year. Nashville is going to be hit with an almost $25 million cap hit. Montreal isn't responsible for a penny of it. I mean, that's a huge, huge, huge blow to Nashville if anything like that happens. I think it starts when he's 36. 36 and up, it goes up each year. But at age 36, Nashville is looking at a $6 million per year cap hit for retired Shea Weber that hadn't played for him in, what, 6 years will be at the time? So, you know, there's a lot of implications to the deal than just the deal itself when it comes to the stuff that the fans don't care about, and that's the cap and the legalities of it and the dollars. But in a pure sense, player for player, I think it's even for 2, maybe 3 years. It evens itself out. But come the third year, maybe pushing it to the fourth year, Nashville wins this trade hands down.
Okay.
Totally.
All right. Hey, look, let's real quick cover Stamkos opting to stay in Tampa. Let's keep it quick so we can get back on track with the Boston guys. So, Reed, what do you think of his decision to stay there?
I honestly think that's the smartest move he could have made. If he goes to Toronto, expectations through the ceiling. If he goes to Detroit, what are they? Are you signing on a rebuilding team? Vancouver got in. I don't think the same situation as Detroit. Buffalo got in. That was the one that I thought might have been somewhat interesting just because of some of the young players on the rise there, but maybe too close to home. And again, a lot of expectations if he was going to sign a giant deal there. I think going back to Tampa, familiarity, he's got a great spot on that team. They put really nice cast around him. I think he made a great choice to go back. And Steve Yzerman did a great job to get him at the number that he did when people were throwing out, you know, contracts in the 7-year, $12 million a year range, getting him at 8 and 8.5. Real nice job by both Steven Stamkos and Steve Yzerman.
I'll keep it short and simple, Kirk. And I've said it all throughout the season that Steven Stamkos was going nowhere else but back to Tampa. Believed that from day one and believed it up until the announcement was made. I don't think that deep down inside it's not that he didn't think about what else was out there, but that's where his heart was all along, and that's where he wanted to be.
It's pretty hard to say no to Stevie Y, isn't it?
Yeah, very hard, very hard.
Okay, guys, let's get back to the Boston Bruins. Okay, so it is June 30th, tomorrow, begins this annual free agent frenzy. Let's start with Dom. What do we think is going to happen tomorrow from a Bruins perspective in terms of, you know, you alluded to it earlier, what do you realistically see maybe happening or are people going to have their hopes up based on some of the rumors and the speculation that's flying around, and then it's largely going to be kind of play around the margins and upgrade the team, but not do anything substantial?
Well, let's start with the name that's been out there the longest, Kirk, and that would be Kevin Shattenkirk.
It's a great name, by the way, Shattenkirk. Okay, anyway, go ahead.
Yeah, that great. Yeah, you know, I had to put something out there first just for that. You know, the Blues' interest is to re-sign Brouwer and to re-sign Backes. And if they hit free agency tomorrow and they sign someplace else, then the Blues aren't going to be in such a hurry to trade Shattenkirk. That's the information I have. That was their priority. They talked to Shattenkirk. They're not going to be close on the money. They're not going to be close on the term. And be able to keep those two. So, you know, that's why the consideration was given to trading Shattenkirk. Now, if Brouwer goes and Backes goes, you know, I think Shattenkirk is pretty much in St. Louis, at least until trade deadline. That's number one. Number two, and we touched on it a bit earlier, is the threat of an offer sheet. And, you know, it's interesting. I mentioned Elliot Friedman come up with an interesting scenario. Even Bob McKenzie retweeted an article about the offer sheet to Trouba. So Bob McKenzie, number one, wouldn't retweet something like that if he thought it was outright ridiculous and not no chance of happening. So there's two heavy hitters in McKenzie and Friedman that are on it. And I know Joe Haggerty and Jimmy Murphy are taking a lot of flack for coming out with it when they did, but I think it's uncalled for. But the scenario that Elliot Friedman proposed or come up with was similar to what the Canucks did with Jamie Benn. Offer a 1-year contract at I believe it was $9 million, maybe it was $9.3 million. And have what he called a nudge nudge wink wink deal in place to have an extension much less for beginning in 2017-2018. Okay? And what that does is it forces Winnipeg to match that offer of 1 year at $9.3 million. But what it also does is, because he remains a restricted free agent for 3 years after that, his qualifying offer for the next 3 years to keep his rights would have to be $9.3 million, $9.3 million, and $9.3 million. So the threat, and I think it was out there to maybe get the two teams to talk trade, as opposed to realistically, here's the offer sheet. But there's so many scenarios that can play out. When it comes to Trouba. But as I said earlier, without giving the agent's name out and giving anything away, I wasn't specifically told it was for Trouba. I mean, there are other options out there, and you know, when we talk about the draft, we're going to talk about Frederick there and the Bruins pick at 29, and Elliot Friedman reported that the Bruins tried to trade down with New Jersey or Philadelphia to try and recoup back their own second round or their own third round pick, just so they could make the offer sheet play. You know, so that's out there, boys. I think it's legit. Whether they actually go out and do it, I don't know. And will it bring somebody to the table? I think it will. But other than that, you know, I can see them making a play for Backes, but they're not going to go overboard on it. It's funny when you look at defensemen that weren't qualified or didn't receive their qualifying offers. And I just saw, as we began this on Twitter, that James Wisniewski is being bought out. So he's going to be available tomorrow morning as well. So are they looking for a gap to fill in when some of these younger kids are ready in 2 and 3 years? I think that's the route they're going to go. How much they want to spend, I don't know. Is there an RFA that didn't get a qualifying offer that fits in as young enough and that could play in that group? Justin Schultz, I don't know. Brandon Gormley, I know Bruins fans love the idea of acquiring him just this season if he was available, but he didn't receive a qualifying offer and he's available. The other thing too, and I wouldn't be surprised to see this happen tomorrow, wouldn't shock me, is if they sign somebody and Adam McQuaid is traded. I think there's a redundancy there with Kevin Miller and Adam McQuaid, that one of them is going to go in. And as much as Bruins fans are going to hate it, I think it's going to be Adam McQuaid. And, otherwise, I'll save it until later because I know we're going to talk about it until later. So I'll pass it over to Reed.
Let me ask you something, though, so we don't go over ground that Dom's already covered. What's the dream scenario for Boston if you were GM? What do you do and how do you accomplish it within the framework of what he's talked about?
Boy, oh boy. I think the dream scenario would be to walk away with your top-end defenseman and maybe fill another gap on that blue line and pick up some type of forward who can come in and give you production. Brandon Peary is a name who stands out to me as somebody who could come in on what I wouldn't expect it to be that heavy of a contract and would be able to give you some decent play, some production. Kind of guy that can put the puck in the back of the net, knows how to get there. I would be just as happy to see him come in on the forward group. Defense is where the assets are going to have to be spent, but is it Trouba? Is it another RFA? Do you take the run at Demers? Do you look at somebody under the radar, as Dom said? Maybe Patrick Wierkosz, who was not called by the Ottawa Senators, was a name that really stood out to me. I've been a big fan of his for a long time, 6 foot, and you shouldn't be able to skate like that. It's 4'6". With that next group of guys coming along, I think he could be an ideal target who, again, wouldn't break the bank and would allow you to do some of these other things. So I'd like to see, ideally, just what Adam McQuaid, I think, that may be the road that we wind up going down if we're going to look at up-tempo and faster. If you could add two defensemen and a forward in some combination and within enough cap space to get that done, I don't know. I have a lot of favorite cousins that could smell, but if it's being used as a ploy to get somebody to the trade table, why not? It's happened to us. But there's just been so many names batted around in the last 48 to 72 hours that it's hard to nail down. If there's not a situation like with Edmonton and Lucic where you pretty much know they're really in on Lucic, I don't really know at this point who the most likely to come to Boston is.
Yeah. Hey, unfortunately, I think your connection on your end is kind of wonky there. You were in and out and breaking up. That's happened a few times. So just letting you know that, Reed. I don't know if it's your internet connection or what.
Hmm. I'll work on that.
Okay. Dom, did you have anything you wanted to follow up on the Boston Bruins side?
I know fans don't see the plan or the vision that Sweeney has. If it were me, Kirk, running the show, here's what I would do. I would find a stopgap until some of these kids are ready. 3 years, start bringing them up slowly, because if you look at the defensemen that the Bruins have drafted, with Torrey Krug here now for 4 years,
they've got some players. And then there's Colin Miller. Don't forget him.
Yeah, Colin Miller, and drafting Charlie McAvoy, and we'll talk about him later. To me, that guy jumps up right into the top two prospects the Bruins have, but we'll get into him more later. But I think when you look at that defense the Bruins are building, that's going to be a top-notch defense in this league. Their goaltending is set, with Tuukka Rask, and then you've got three prospects who can still legitimately be starters in the NHL at some point. So their back end and their goaltending look good. I wouldn't do anything overboard unless you're bringing in a Trubar or a Lindholm or somebody like that that's young enough and going to make an impact sooner rather than later and stay the course and go the way he's going. And that's what I would do. But now with Seidenberg gone, he has to bring in defenseman somewhere.
Yeah, I agree with that, and I'm with you. I am not a fan of going onto the open market and overpaying. By going onto the open market, you're going to do something that makes sense and isn't going to break the bank. And they're just, anybody that could have possibly constituted that kind of an option is pretty much off the board. Wisniewski is an option, but he would constitute a risk because he just can't stay healthy. He's signed a couple big ticket contracts and just hasn't proven worth it since he signed that big one with Columbus. What was it, back in 2011 or 2012, whenever it was? I think it was 2011. So, I mean, it's risky business, but I'm with you. They can find some serviceable players and bargains out there to be that stopgap. At this point, the Bruins need an upgrade somewhere, but they're not going to build Rome in a day. And I don't think you're going to build Rome by going out on the unrestricted free agent bill of fare and spending wildly and blowing that cap space you have, because you have a guy named David Pastrnak that's going to be coming due for a contract next summer. And then, like you said, we need to be looking 3-4 years down the road and building the team that way. And there is a potential for a payoff, but trying to fix it all or put them, take cheap shortcuts to contention is probably going to prove costly. And I don't even think that they can get there from here, to be completely honest with you.
Totally agree, Kirk. I mentioned it in our podcast regarding the draft. It's, to me, and I think you guys were in agreement, that the team is legitimately 3-4 years away of being making a serious, serious impact. So, why blow it on something today? That really isn't going to – but I understand that, they want to make the playoffs. They want to get the players that experience, the younger kids and all that. And, I always go back to what a GM once told me. He said he always likes to acquire players with a winning attitude or that have been in a winning situation. I mean, we'll go back to Taylor Hall. He won – two Memorial Cups back to back with the Windsor Spitfires, but has never tasted the playoffs since. Like, you know, is that something you have to move out of Edmonton? And, you know, you don't want these kids coming up in Boston and missing the playoffs year after year after year like that. So, yeah, you want to make the playoffs, get them into that atmosphere, get them to know what it's like, and so on. But, you know, people that fail to see the vision that Sweeney has, I like to say to them, you know, you have to be a little patient. It's there. I mean, I can see it. I'm not the brightest guy in the world. If I can see it, I'm sure that some of them can see it, you know?
Yeah, I agree. Okay, I'm going to pull an audible, guys. We had originally scheduled to talk OHL draft recap. Let's move that to the back end because I think people are chomping at the bit to hear our take on the Bruins draft. We're pushing an hour as it stands, so if we get to the OHL guys, we'll get to them, or maybe we can do them later. But let's focus our time where it needs to be, and that's on the Boston Bruins draft. So before we get into the players, Dom, you had talked about opening up a little with maybe the Bruins drafting philosophy, and maybe talk about at least one other team that sees and maybe values players similarly to the way the Bruins do, but does business maybe a little differently. So I'm going to open that up to you to talk Bruins draft philosophy, and then from there we will enter into a free-flowing discussion about Charlie McAvoy, Trent Frederick, Ryan Lindgren, and then the other three players the Bruins added to the system on Friday and Saturday. So let's talk that draft philosophy, if you would, sir.
Yeah, well, we'll call it, you and I have talked about it before, I think we call it the Winnipeg model, and quite simply it's this, and we're seeing the Bruins do more of it, and it's more crossover among scouts. So their WHL scout will make a trip to, let's say, the under-18s, or maybe go catch an OHL game, or something like that, or guys from overseas will come over and see a couple of players here. And I can't remember who I was talking to. I think it may have even been you, Kurt, when Winnipeg won the draft lottery and ended up with the second overall pick. You know, they weren't expecting that, and the thought of drafting Patrick Laine had never crossed their mind. They thought he was well out of reach. So when that happened, they thought, well, you know what? We haven't seen this kid play. And what did they do? They brought everybody, most of their scouts, to Grand Forks at the under-18s just to watch the kid play, because their motto is, and I believe you use the same at Redline, is if you haven't seen a kid play live, you're not allowed to talk to him. Not allowed to talk about him.
Correct.
I think it's important that the more scouts you have viewing the same players, the better off you are. Otherwise, you end up at a round table where everybody's just arguing for their guy, and really, that doesn't accomplish anything.
Yeah, and what it comes down to is guys are left out. You know, you hire these scouts, you trust them, you have them on your staff for a reason. Why not empower them to see more, you know, as many games and as many players as possible? Because what that does is that enriches your draft meetings. If it ends up that you only have a couple crossover guys in the chief scout, I mean, you know, for fans that aren't familiar, the guy that sees the most games of anybody is the team's chief scout, because he's going all over. He's traveling to the regions. He's going to all the major tournaments, and he's asking his area guys to, you know, to prioritize who he needs to see when he goes into their area. And so the chief scout sees the most games, and then the crossover scouts see the next most games, right? Because they're going to the various areas as well, and they're checking on the area guys, and they're reporting back to the chief scout. And then the guys that are down in the trenches, they see a lot of games. It's not a matter of necessarily quantity, but in a lot of cases it is, because in certain areas you're limited. Your area scouts are seeing those area players. And if you're in an area like, say, New England, that has a down year this year, where there are really only a couple of guys that are actually in physically in New England that are projectable higher end draft picks. In this case, we had two in the first round this year, Charlie McAvoy and Tage Thompson. You're limited in terms of the contributions you can make in a scouting meeting if all you've done is seen those players. And that's the, when we talk about the Winnipeg model, they try to get not only their crossover scouts and chief scout doing the viewing, but some of their area guys as well, so that when they have those meetings, there is a richness and a depth to the conversation, and they're not in an echo chamber. Because, you know, human nature is human nature. Chief scouts tend to surround themselves with guys they know and are comfortable and with. And as a result, maybe some of those crossover guys that are close to the chief scout maybe tend to see the exact same things and value the exact same things the chief scout does. So that's a dangerous, you know, thing to have potentially, because then you have potential blind spots if everyone is just kind of looking at each other and agreeing with each other about the players. What you need are guys that aren't going to be yes men, that are going to put their hand up and say, well, hold on, I saw, you know, player A, and I'm seeing some red flags that you guys haven't brought up. What about this? What about that? That's what makes, I think, you have to have a team of rivals in your scouting staffs, and you have to have people that aren't going to just be yes men, are going to be not permitted to speak because they haven't seen a player live, and therefore they can't contribute anything to the conversation. So that's really what it comes down to. And so, you know, Line A starring at the World Junior Championship like he did, because Winnipeg had more scouts in Helsinki watching that tournament, therefore they had more people that could weigh in and help them with that evaluation when he unexpectedly fell into their lap.
Yeah, and to touch on that, I think in Dean Malcock and Keith Gretzky, I would imagine that Malcock is the biggest crossover guy for the Bruins, based on things that I've heard. But I don't think Malcock is a yes person. I think that if he's in disagreement, he'll let Gretzky know. I mean, that's
right.
That's the sense I get out of it.
Yeah, no, and, I'm not speaking specifically about the Bruins or
right.
Dean or anybody. I'm just saying that could happen, though. It's pretty well
right.
established that the NHL is kind of an old boys network when it comes to certain things, and there that possibility exists. So I speak generally and hypothetically that if you're a team and you limit you don't. And it takes an investment, as you well know, guys. It takes teams that are willing to spend the money to fly guys to different locations when they could just simply not make that investment and leave them at home and minimize the expenses. So the teams that are willing to invest, send different guys and pay the expenses to get them from point A to point B that is out of their area, those teams potentially are mitigating the blind spots that could occur if it's just a couple guys that are trusted agents of that chief scout who are doing all the talking, and you know, the rest of the staff is just kind of sitting around twiddling their thumbs, and they're interested, you know, they're interested in the discussion that's taking place, but they're not empowered to participate. And that's the
right.
big thing, without getting too down in the weeds. Reed, did you have an opinion on this?
Well, I think anytime you get scouts out to see more games and utilize that crossover ability, it can only be a good thing. The more educated people you have in the room on any given topic, it doesn't just have to be scouting, any topic you can think of, the more educated people you have in the room, the better off you're going to be when you come to your conclusion. It's something you can take from any line in the world and relay it into hockey. And I think that it's more than worth the investment for teams to do that.
Okay, so on that note, let's talk about the Bruins' first round. They had two picks going in. They held on to both. There was talk that they might trade one. I said up front, I'd be surprised if they held on to both. From what I could gather, there was an effort to try to trade that 29. The Bruins were pretty staunch in holding on to 14 because they recognized they were going to get a really good player, someone they really valued and cared about. This goes back to that passion in scouting. If you're passionate about someone and you know you're kind of in that range where he might fall to you, you want to stay there. You don't want to move back, and you don't want to necessarily trade that pick unless it's for such a no-brainer deal. And it's hard to get those no-brainer deals on draft day. So they stayed at 14, and then they surprisingly stayed at 29. Sweeney unable to move that 29th selection, so they stood pat. At 14, they got Charlie McAvoy. Guys, What did they get in Charlie McAvoy, and what can fans expect in terms of his potential, his ceiling, his floor, and ultimately how long do we think it's going to take to get him there?
Boy, I think they got a player here, Kirk. Now, obviously, you know, my viewings of him are pretty limited. I've watched him on video. I actually got a hold of an isolation video of him for one game, and I'm pretty impressed. Like I said earlier, I think he moves up into the top two, if not the number one Bruins prospect right now. You know, if he reaches his potential, he's a first pairing number one defenseman. I don't think that they could have gone wrong with if they had chosen Pavlo instead. But it goes into believing what you believe and what your scouts are telling you. And I'm more than happy with the selection. Only time's going to tell if he's going to reach that potential. But I'm loving it. How far is he away? I wouldn't be surprised if once his season is finished in the spring that he signs his entry level contract. Then and maybe a year in Providence and he's up with the big club. But I don't think he's that far off. I really don't. Yeah, certainly he's closer to playing in the NHL than Favreau. I think he's closer to playing in the NHL than Joel Levy, and I've seen Joel Levy play a lot this year.
Is it because of the physical maturity you're talking about?
The
wide body and the strength. Yeah, I agree. Reid, what do you think about McAvoy?
Plus, he has the head to be there. So that's my take on him.
Yeah, Reid, go ahead. Did we lose Reid?
This pick.
As the draft was going along
there, guys, one thing I always do is I make a list, and as it's going along, I'll cross out names as they get drafted, and just as you see going there, you want to board, and where I had it, you guys had me convinced after our last on Favreau. So I was looking at Favreau, him and I had McAvoy, 1 and 2, and I said to myself, it doesn't matter. They announced Charlie McAvoy, beautiful. I agree with Don, potential number one defenseman, and he's not that far away from the National Hockey League. One thing I always like to do after a draft, I try to get as much video as I can on the guys that the Bruins take, and I try to read as much as I can on scouting reports from people who have watched him live and get as much information as I can to help form my opinion on the player. And everything I've seen out of McAvoy, I like. Everything I've read on McAvoy, I like. I think you're looking at a guy who is a potential number one defenseman and whose floor, I can't see him being lower than a second pair defenseman. He's just got all the tools. He's got the offensive ability, the defensive shutdown capabilities, the mind for the game. He's a smooth skater. He's got a nice top speed, excellent acceleration. His footwork, even you can notice it in his back crossovers as he's skating. His footwork is so fluid. He's just really fun to watch, and I'm really excited about this pick. I think he does immediately go to number one in terms of the Bruins prospect rankings.
Yeah, I actually have him still number two behind Sinishin, but, I mean, yeah, man, it's more a 1-1A. I think those two players potentially on the amateur side, and I would have Vetrano as my number one on the pro side for prospects. I think those guys are very, very close in terms that they're going to boost. They're going to give the Bruins potentially a top two line forward option and a top two pairing defenseman, if not a solid 1-2 who can play in all situations and has that high offensive ceiling that is so so important in this day and age of the NHL.
I agree with you 100%, Kirk. And I mean, I've seen Zachary Sinishin play a lot over the course of two seasons. And, you know, like I said, my viewings of McAvoy have been limited to video, but, you know, in talking to you and others and what I have been able to see, I'm sold there, totally sold.
Cool. Yeah, I've seen quite a bit of Sinishin as well from working in the OHL, and explosive, so powerful on his skates, really going to be a guy to watch for Boston. But I've always, and maybe it's from being a defenseman, from being from such a young age, but I've always valued your top-end defenseman just a little bit higher than the top-end forward. So that's why I have McAvoy just slightly ahead of Sinishin on my list, but I couldn't be more excited for both of them.
Okay. Well, let's move on to the next guy then, Trent Frederick. Now, I'll be honest, I tried to play it off in the days of your podcast that I wasn't that surprised, but I was surprised. I was shocked. Just didn't see that coming, but like you, Reed, that's a good TTP in terms of I have seen him live, but I also gathered as much information as I could, talking to his former coaches, talking to people who knew him, ultimately, I was more and more impressed, and I said to myself, you know, I need to allow for the possibility of just getting him wrong. Scouted him at the U18s, wasn't all that impressed with him, but come to find out he had a hand injury that hampered him for much of the year. He's been cleared since, but that might have played into it. You can't teach his size and his ability to do honest work along the walls in front of the net. He's not a flashy guy, but then neither is David Backes, right? What he is very good at is protecting the puck. And they say he's a tremendous athlete, and it runs in the family. If you look, multiple siblings are high-end athletes at the college level. Trent Frederick just seems to be one of these guys that, yeah, you know, if you gauge it solely on skill and upside as being your must-haves in the first round, no matter that pick 29 is closer to the second or not, then yeah, the Bruins probably overvalued him a bit. But when you look at what they need in their system and how much they liked this player, this goes back to someone the scouts just felt passionate about. We heard this from them last year with Sinishin, and that turned out pretty well. So maybe this is another one of those wait and see, and we just might be pleasantly surprised. What say you?
Well, that's where I went with this whole idea on Trent Frederick, because when I heard the name, I kind of had to double take for a second and just kind of, what? But again, the more you look into him, the more the pick started to win me over. And I like the size. I like the comparables. You know, they say he doesn't have the explosive offensive ability, but his comparable was David Backes. Well, if you're going to tell me that you just got David Backes at number 29, I'm okay with that. I'm more than okay with that, if that's what he pans out to be. The other thing that I find very interesting, and I think it's going to be a saga as the summer goes along, I just did a radio show here in Hamilton on TSN 1150 with a gentleman who is very close to the Burke family that owns the Niagara Ice Dogs. They are extremely interested in having Trent Frederick come to the OHL next season, where he would immediately slot in, as has been explained to me, the Niagara Ice Dogs' number one center. So that puts a whole nother element into this conversation, because I think a lot of times the NCAA can be a great development league for guys who are looking to develop physically. Trent Frederick is already more than developed physically. He needs game action, and he'll get more game action in the Ontario Hockey League. And for him personally, he'll expedite his path to the pros. I think that could be a great road for both him and the Bruins, and he would have a chance to play top two line, maybe first line in the Ontario Hockey League. That is an exciting thought if he goes that route.
Yeah. Point of clarification. Backes comp came from Frederick, and it was, hey, I like Backes. He's a guy I try to play like. He also talked about Justin Abdelkader as a player he likes to play like. Not sure that hockey guys were making the Backes comparison, but if he's even half as good as Backes to three-quarters as good as Backes, then I don't think anyone can argue with that being a good value at 29. Dom, what do you think of Frederick and this potential for him to go to the OHL?
Well, yeah, I was with Reed, and I've heard from another person that there's a good possibility that he could end up there. They want him there. You know, I'm not sure if the Bruins are the type of team. Well, yeah, I guess maybe I would say they are the type of team to say, listen, we want you in the OHL because we think that's the best for you. I mean, we see them do it with Alex Kokolchev when they first allowed him to go to the KHL, and then they told him they wanted him to come back, and he did. So if the Bruins, I think that it is the best for him and for the team that they'll make that recommendation. That said, the pick at 29, you know, you look at Alex DeBrincat on the board, Adam Maskren still on the board, even Jordan Kyrou still on the board. I don't know, man. But that said, if it was me making the pick, I would have gone with one of those three. But it goes back to what we were talking about earlier. The Bruins watched this kid play. And I'm not about to suggest that there was 100% agreement on it, but there had to be some sort of agreement about it amongst the round table. And, you know, and they sought their guy and they took him. And good on them for doing that. You have to believe that the people you have in the position to make the choices for you are making the right choice, and you have to stand by that. So kudos to for them to do that and pick their guy. You know, I'm not as hard as on the kid as some people are. I've only gotten to watch a little bit of video of him and some highlights. I wish I could grab an isolation video of him somewhere. If you have one, Kirk, email it to me, please, and thank you.
Sorry, bud, it's in my mind. But there are some good highlights packages of him out there.
Yeah, I've seen the highlights. So, look, it comes down to this. When you're talking about an Alex DeBrincat or an Adam Maskren or Jordan Kyrou, maybe so not so much Masker, but they bring one thing to the table, and that is their offense. And if they're not successful at that, what else are they going to be able to bring to you? So, if Alex DeBrincat doesn't make it as a top six forward in the NHL, then there's nothing else for him.
Yeah.
Okay. Frederick, if he doesn't make it as a top six forward, nobody's suggesting he's going to be, you know, he still plays a game where he could be, in the top nine, third line or fourth line, be a penalty killer, play the game the right way, is smart, does all the little things for you that you need players to do to win. And so, he's in a way, he's a safer pick than a DeBrincat or Jordan Kyrou, for example, are. Because, like I said, if they don't bring the offense, they're not bringing anything else to you. Whereas at least Frederick will bring something else to the table.
Yeah.
So, you know, I'm a high-risk, high-reward kind of guy, so I would have passed and taken one of the potential goal scorers. But, you know, I don't think like a team does, so I don't have all the other things to worry about.
Yeah, he wasn't my guy. If they were going to get a center, I was looking at Will Bitten. Will Bitten there, he would have been my guy. Actually, Brett Howden was a guy I had a lot of time for, but Tampa Bay had snaked him.
Yeah,
just a few picks earlier. Okay, you know, when Charles Jacobs got up to the podium and he said from the U.S. national team on Friday night, I was convinced he was about to call Ryan Lindgren's name, and or, you know, Joey Anderson, that would have been a little early for him. But I was not expecting Frederick, so I was a little speechless, and those guys, those Bruins fans that were there will, you know, can attest to that. But it ended up at 49 the next day. Ryan Lindgren was the name, in fact, called by the Bruins. So what are you guys' thoughts on Lindgren? And I'll hold my comments to the end, because I think everyone kind of knows where I stand on this guy.
Well, you know, he's another guy you add into that defensive group that they've drafted that is going to play in the NHL. Again, limited viewings for me, you know, basically all on video, but everything tells me, you know, this guy is competitive. He's not afraid to push up in the play or push the play or lead the play. But most of all, and what the Bruins seem to be focusing on a lot is he has that character. And, you know, if you look at the prospects the Bruins have on D, man, you're gonna wonder where are they gonna fit all these guys in. And like Lindgren to me will play in the NHL. I mean, no doubt in my mind. And I guess it's up to him how far he goes and how far he makes it. But to me, he has that competitive spirit and that drive to succeed. And I think he's going to be another good one. You know, he'll probably be a middle pairing guy, and that's just fine, because when you've got a McAvoy and anybody else you bring in, you know, it
blows on potentially,
you know,
Carlo.
Yeah. Carlo
O'Gara.
O'Gara, any of them.
Grizzly. Don't forget Matty Grizz.
Yeah,
Matty Grizz is going to be on the blog next week. I'm doing a big interview with him for the blog. So he's kind of he and O'Gara are the forgotten men sometimes.
Yeah, and you know, you got to love the direction Sweeney has taken this team with the defense. And, he's going to have a hard time giving them all ice time. You know, they're not going to be able to keep them all, but at least when you've got 7, 8, 9 of them like that, you can pick and choose which ones you want, and you're going to end up with the best of the bunch. So, and Lindgren's right there in that territory for me. So, yeah, I absolutely love the pick, and Bruins fans should too. So, I personally wouldn't have been surprised if they had taken him at 29, to be honest with you.
Yeah, I feel really good about this pick because I felt a lot like I did last year with Brandon Carlo. I thought by the time we were up in the second round, there was no way he was still going to be sitting there. I thought for sure he was going to go in the late first round. So I was so happy when I saw his name come up for the Bruins. Same deal with Ryan Lindgren. And again, as Dom said, limited viewings for me, but when I looked at this defense moving forward and you add Lindgren in, if you look at Matty Grizz and Jeremy Lauzon and Charlie McAvoy as the talent level to this defense, and you look at guys like O'Gara and Carlo as the physicality, I think you just got your heart and soul with Ryan Lindgren. That's the guy that could be the potential locker room leader for this group of young defensemen that's coming forward. And that is really exciting. You start stacking all of these guys up together, and wow, what a group Don Sweeney is building. I'm so impressed with the scouting that they've done for defensemen. I think they've got something here that could be really special moving forward, and I think Ryan Lindgren is going to be a big part of that. I just see his leadership and character being something that is going to be really wanted and needed on this Bruins back line, and he's going to be the kind of guy to deliver big moments.
Yeah, I'll just say that you guys have pretty much captured, I mean, for me to continue would be redundant, and people can read what I've said and listen to what I've said in other interviews on Lindgren if they want to know my original thoughts, but they're I think you guys are pretty bang on. But the one thing I said to Keith Gretzky, and it's the highest compliment I can pay a player anywhere, because I've actually been there multiple times. And I say Ryan Lindgren's a guy you go to war with. He's a kid I would love to have on my tank crew. He's a kid that I could see leading special operations troops somewhere in tough spots, because he has a rare blend of maturity, drive, self-discipline, and just character. He's a guy that everyone wants to follow. And to a man, Gretzky said that to a man, all of the USA guys they interviewed at the Combine, when they asked them about who the pure leaders that they wanted to follow and were willing to do anything for, Lindgren was the name that came up first and foremost every single time. So, Bruins, I didn't hit it out of the park with him. I didn't write a whole lot about him because I just didn't think he would be there. But gave him some love, and this is just a really good, you know, people can say, hey, reverse 29 and 49, but in the end, what does it matter? They're both Bruins, much like Jared Knight and Ryan Spooner. Spooner ended up making it for the Bruins, and who knows? If the Bruins are lucky, both of those guys will impact them down the road. Now, Reed, I'm going to, again, this thing is running long. We still have some things to get to, so let's condense it a bit. There are three more players that were taken, two of which come from your wheelhouse. You've certainly always enjoyed Europe, the European side of things. And then we have a North American Michigan product by way of Texas that's kind of bookended between big Finnish center Juuna Koponen and small but energy fleet of foot Oscar Steen in terms of defenseman Cam Clark. Talk about these three players and what you think, and then we'll pitch it over to Dom. We'll just kind of hit the wave tops on these three, because honestly, I think at this stage they're far enough along in their development that we can save a deep dive on them for a later day.
Yeah, and we can always dive into them if they start to make waves in the next year. Cam Clark, I'm going to have to leave a little bit because I haven't really seen a lot of him. I know the upside there is impressive, so that's a guy that I think Bruins fans should keep their eyes on. Don't let the draft position fool you. That could be a really sneaky good pickup. Juuna Koponen is a monster. He's 6'5", and right around the 200-pound mark. He can skate decently well. He can play the center position quite a bit better, actually, I think, than Kampainen did for us in this last season. Koponen, I think his hockey sense is just very impressive. Oscar Steen, there's a player I really like. The Swedes did not invite many 18-year-olds to their World Junior camp. And Oscar Steen was one of them. He actually scored, I believe it was 6 points in 17 games in the Swedish Elite League last year when he came up, and he forced his way up.
Correct.
He played very well in their Super Elite League. Very fast, edgy kind of player. He's miserable to try to play against. How high is the skill level? I don't quite know. Sometimes it's hard to tell in the Swedish League because it's not a very offensive league, but he's the kind of guy that, with the style of game he plays, translates well to North America because he really enjoys playing in people's faces, and he is a fun player. I get to see him twice after the Swedish Elite League last year, and boy, just the defenseman he was playing against had such a miserable time when he was on the ice. He would buzz around in between them. He'd hit anything that moved, which is impressive on international ice. And if he continues his development, PJ Axelsson may have hit another one for us.
Yeah, hey, Dom, a question for you. So my boss at Redline, Kyle Woodleaf, had this comment. He said, hey, not sure what the Bruins are doing. If you want to take a 5'9 forward, then take DeBrincat, take Maskarin, take Vitali Abramov. I know Steen isn't in your wheelhouse as someone you're overly familiar with, but just kind of comment on that and see if there's something there or what your general assessment is of taking a 5'9 forward in the sixth round versus earlier, where that higher reward is certainly there for higher, you know, players that have a world of skill more than he does.
Well, I mean, I'm going to defer to Reed when it comes to Koponen and Steen, because really I can't add much, but I will say this about Clark and Steen. That's exactly what they should be doing in rounds 5, 6, and 7. Those are the type of players that they should be looking at. Players that were late blooming or are going to be late blooming, that are long shots but still have a chance. That's how you find a Zetterberg. Not that any of these guys are going to become Henrik Zetterberg, but I think I mentioned it in the last podcast, this is the route that I would rather see the team go than draft somebody out of the CHL, which you have to make a bona fide offer to after year one and sign them by year two. And God knows what happens after that. So at least with these guys, you have their rights for a few years. You can watch their development, see how they're progressing, and then decide what you want to invest in those players. So I've got no problems with those picks. As for what Kyle had to say, I already said my choice would have been to take DeBrincat at 29. But seeing that they didn't, I don't understand the Steen pick in at 165. But again, he falls into that wheelhouse of the type of players I want to see them take in those late rounds, because you never know what they're going to turn out to be. And you can find a hidden gem by doing that rather than going what's on the board and, trying to follow what everybody else does. So, I mean, that's all I can add on those guys.
Okay. So that essentially covers it. I want to circle back on Charlie McAvoy, because if you saw my blog, you saw that I posted 3 pictures of him last night. One is of him signing an autograph. There were some raucous Bruins fans, and as he was walking down underneath the tunnel to go into the media area for his first interview, they were yelling at him and wanted him to sign some hats and things, and he happily obliged. What was interesting to me is that Mikhail Sergachev had finished his media session and was walking out of the tunnel as McAvoy was standing there, and at any time he could have just kept walking. And instead, Sergachev saw McAvoy, recognize him, and stood there and waited patiently. McAvoy didn't see him at all. So McAvoy is signing away. Sergachev waited patiently. And then when McAvoy turned around, Sergachev said a few words of congratulations and they embraced. And I got that on camera. Of course, I tweeted one out on Friday and people were, of course, doing the, I want to get rid of him already because he's hugging a Habs guy. But I'm curious as to what impression you guys are left. I mean, I don't know if you've seen the photos.
I just brought it up now, and I'm just seeing it now for the first time. So, that's awesome.
So what are your impressions of those photos? And I'm going to tell you what my read is. And my read was solidified when I spoke to BU coach Dave Quinn, who's McAvoy's current coach, and current Wisconsin assistant Don Granato, who coached him at the national team. So what do you guys think about that?
I think it just speaks to the character that Charlie McAvoy has. I think that anytime you get a guy and you see those type of things out of him, I'm just really impressed with how, I guess the right wording would be how mature he is as an 18-year-old. That's very impressive to me, and he's the kind of guy that I want on my team. And, it really shows the plan for Donny too, I think, in that he took a guy with a ton of talent but a ton of character to go with it. And there's that balancing act between talent and character. And if you can find it just right, you can make a special group. And I think that's what he's attempting to do here.
I totally agree, but I'll add one other word in, and that is respect. And it speaks to both players, because Sergachev obviously showed a lot of character in waiting for him to finish signing those autographs. But it also shows that Sergachev has a tremendous amount of respect for McAvoy to wait for him and to congratulate him. You know, I'm just reading as I'm going here, Kirk, and like you, I'm trying to find the connection between the two, where the two would have crossed paths, and I don't know. So I echo everything Reed said and throw in the respect factor that the kid it just draws towards him.
Yeah. No, I think you're bang on. So I showed the photos to both coaches that night, and they both said, wow. Now, what they had said prior to me showing them the photos was magnetic personality. That was what David Quinn described him as. And Granato said the same thing. He said, guys just gravitated to Charlie. They, you know, they wanted to be around him. He's just got this. And guys, I'll tell you, I interviewed him on the phone for the first time and was impressed and got that from him, because he was a lot of fun, and he wasn't stiff, and he wasn't slick and polished either. Now, Fabro was very mature. You know, Fabro was more of a mini Bergeron, in that he's kind of a steely-eyed killer who's pretty serious, whereas McAvoy's a little more fun and a little more even-keeled and allowing for. You get the sense that he has a zest for life. But what both coaches said in spades is that people just naturally gravitate to him. They want to be around Charlie McAvoy. He's wonderful in the room. And then the word that Granato used was that he was very loyal, extremely coachable. So that if the coaches approached him about elements of his game he needed to work on, he embraced it, and he was willing to go that extra mile to improve, that he wanted to improve. He's not a kid that has it all figured out and thinks that he knows everything. And ultimately, I think you guys nailed it. It's about respect. Sergachev did not have to stop. He could have kept on moving. McAvoy wouldn't have seen him. The fact that he felt compelled to stop, not only stop, but then wait on the biggest night of his life, so that he could share that moment with an American and a guy that's going to be on his biggest rival team. We have the potential to see these guys going head-to-head, much like Tuukka Rask and Carey Price when they were both picked in the first round of the 05 draft. Pretty exciting. And ultimately, I think respect is 100% right. For Sergachev and McAvoy to come together like that shows it that you know, it isn't just about a hatred and a dislike. You want a healthy dislike, and that's, you know, the competition will bring that out. And you don't want your Bruins to be too friendly with your Canadians, but at the same time, you want them to respect each other. That's what makes the game of hockey so great, and that's why when people are lined up shaking hands at the end of a hard-fought series, no other sport does it, and that's what makes hockey unique and why it is the greatest game on earth. Gentlemen, let's close real quickly. How did the Bruins do on the draft overall, and what do you think Don Sweeney needs to focus on next? Dom, you go.
I think they did really well in the draft, Kirk, despite the backlash from some of the fans. I give it a solid B+. I'm that happy with what they've done. Where he has to go, I think he has to continue on the path he's on. Like I mentioned earlier, his goaltending is pretty much set. His defense is set for years to come. He's got to work on that forward group. But most importantly, he has to find a gap filler right now to get him to that, you know, that three-year period that they're going to be waiting. Because, boy, oh, boy, they're going to be a good team for a long time if they can keep all these kids together and they turn out to be what they're projected to be. Yeah. And I think Bruins fans have suffered for 2 years. There's going to be a couple more years of not so great, you know, maybe depending on what they do, they may make the playoffs, but 3-4 years, you'll start to see this team get back into contention, be a contender, and maintain that level for, you know, like we're seeing the Blackhawks do now, you know, a 6-7 year squad is going to be there among the elite of the league. And as long as he sticks to his path and management above him gives him the opportunity to see it through, I think he's heading in the right direction. And people just need to be patient with him.
Okay, Reed, You get the last word, my friend. You have the you get to close it down. And I just would add to Dom, you know, in 3 years, Zdeno Chara is going to be gone. So they better find that. They better find that big defenseman that can, you know, can kind of carry the mantle forward. That's going to be a major challenge. But on that note, Reed, take it away.
I'll start off by saying I agree with pretty much everything Dom said there. I'm going to go with a solid B-plus for the Bruins out of this draft. And if one of the Europeans from the late rounds hits and becomes a player in the NHL, you could see that move into A territory for a draft. They did a really nice job here, and they've got this prospect cabinet just absolutely loaded. Moving forward, they do have to find probably one, well, at least one, maybe two placeholders on defense as you move forward here. I think that process has to start tomorrow. Gotta come away with something to at least bridge that gap, get to these young guys that are coming along. You're going to start to see them pepper into the lineup over the next few years and start to gain experience. And as that happens, this very special group, because there's a lot of talent there and there's a lot of guys that are good at different aspects of the game that could all come together and create a really fun team to watch. That defensive group is just so loaded with talent. If they're number one there that can take over mantle for Chara, take a look for that. But when you take a look, what is so, and that's not looking at a defense that so much would have 1 through 6. You might have 6 number twos all throughout this prospect pool. So I'm very excited with the way this team is going. And again, Don was right. The management just has to let Don Sweeney run this course. They have to take a look at how much talent he's added to this pool and let him continue on this road. Because like you said, if we can see it, they've got to be able to see it. It's coming. It's going to be there. It may take a couple more years, but we're going to see a special group in Boston if they keep all these guys together.
Okay. Well, okay, I don't know. I see the LED lights. Reed, you're kind of breaking up again. I don't know if you're continuing to go, but let's just say that B plus makes 3. I guess we are the three amigos because we all agree. That's the grade I gave for the New England Hockey Journal issue, and I have the proof pages in my possession. So if anyone wants to try to say that I'm just going along with the crowd, I had it yesterday. So nice try, but no, I'm encouraged. We all kind of see that the same way, and that's why we are the three amigos, guys. This has been a real pleasure. I hope for those listeners that stuck with us through an hour and almost 42 minutes of pure hockey talk that it was worth it. And if you clicked off a long time ago, then I guess you're not listening to this. But ultimately, Dom, Reed, can't thank you enough. Have a wonderful summer. Maybe next time we can kind of get to the OHL and talk about not only what, you know, some of the guys that went. I mean, Joel Levy going before Tkachuk was obviously a surprise, but maybe we can break that down in more detail and maybe talk about what happened there in the OHL, and then also talk about what's coming up in 2017. But for now, we're going to sign it off. Guys, again, thank you for your time, and thank you all for listening. This concludes the Three Amigos free agency post-draft extravaganza. For those in America, have a happy 4th of July and enjoy your summer. Take care. Amigos and amigos for